It's so much easier to make change when you understand how. Hello and welcome to the No More Do Better podcast. It's Lisa Butcher-Reed and we are here today talking about physical health. We are up to step three, which is understand your biology and physiology. So today we're going to just jump straight in. First chapter is understand the basic body systems and how they interrelate. Quote, a body system is a collection of parts able to work together to serve a common purpose, growth, reproduction, and survival. That's the Science Learning Hub 2011. In order to really take care of our bodies, we need to understand some of the basics of biology, specifically anatomy and physiology. That is to say, we need to understand how the body works. By understanding how it works, we build a better understanding of what it needs. When we know what it needs, we can better understand what we need to do to take care of it for optimal functioning and performance. When we talk about optimal performance, we're not necessarily talking about just sports performance, such as the ability to run marathons, although that would be included if that's something that we're interested in. Instead, performance, in this case, is about optimal functioning and maintenance, where the body systems are enabled to maintain the body's overall health and well-being. As is always my belief, when we know how something works, we understand the why behind the health advice. Understanding the why gives more grounded understanding and meaning to the guidelines for healthful living and holistic healing. Just as understanding the basics of the brain and nervous system were necessary to understand why we behave a particular way and how to heal our mental and emotional health, so too is it necessary to understand how the body systems work and interrelate, to understand why they need to be taken care of in specific ways. Poor maintenance of our bodies will lead to poor functioning of our body systems, which equates to poor physical health. The human body has 12 systems. Each system is made up of multiple parts, and those individual parts are dependent on each other to perform a function that they cannot perform on their own. In other words, each system is made up of interconnected parts. The different systems are also interrelated, and their overall purpose is to maintain a stable internal environment. Remember back in mental health, we discussed the idea of homeostasis. Well, homeostasis is the state of a stable internal environment. So the 12 systems of the body include the nervous system, the immune system, the lymphatic system, the digestive system, the cardiovascular system, the integumentary system, the respiratory system, the endocrine system, the reproductive system, the excretory system, and the musculoskeletal system. Each system has its own role, which it performs as part of the bigger picture goals of the human body: grow, reproduce, and survive. The musculoskeletal system includes, as you may have guessed from the name, muscles and the skeleton, as well as all the connective tissue that holds it all together. Its unique role is to arrange the body in a way that it can simultaneously hold it together, allow movement, and allow for protection of vital organs. And it also assists in body heat generation. The respiratory system is concerned with breathing. Respiration is the process of inhaling oxygen and utilizing that oxygen in cells throughout the body to break down sugars to obtain energy. Breathing in and out is the process by which the oxygen and carbon dioxide are exchanged between the blood and the lungs. The cardiovascular system transports oxygen, nutrients, and other substances to cells throughout the body and transports waste, carbon dioxide, and other substances away from the cells. We can think of it as a delivery mechanism between other systems. The endocrinary system acts as the physical barrier between the internal and external environment. It consists of the skin, the hypodermis, which is the layer between the skin and underlying organs, and the hair and nails. It also has several roles, including detection of the external stimuli that is fed back to the nervous system. So our senses, our physical sense of touch. The nervous system. Now, hold on. It is about the skin and that protection layer. Okay, the nervous system we're already familiar with because we went into much detail about it back in Understand the Basic Mechanics of the Brain and Nervous System. I think that was episode 8. It is the network within our bodies that both coordinates and regulates our body's response to internal and external stimuli. It takes inputs from our senses, sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, and determines how to respond. When we discussed it previously, we were mostly concerned with the central nervous system, so the brain and spinal cord, which receives and responds to stimuli. The other component of it is the peripheral nervous system that is made up of the nerves that extend from the central nervous system to the rest of the body. It is responsible for carrying the messages to and from the brain and spinal cord. The role of the reproductive system is to reproduce or create continuation of life through offspring. The reproductive system relies heavily on hormones to regulate and is dependent on a calm nervous system to function optimally. The endocrine system is a network of glands throughout the body that are responsible for the production of hormones. We'll discuss hormones in more depth under the next chapter, but for now, we can just think of them as being involved in regulating bodily functions such as metabolism, reproduction, and growth. The digestive system is concerned with processing and breaking down food into nutrients that can be absorbed into the bloodstream to be used for energy, repair, and growth. Unused materials are discharged through the excretory system. The excretory system plays an important role in maintaining homeostasis by excreting, discharging, eliminating, getting rid of, waste from the body. These waste are the byproducts of other body systems' processes and include water, carbon dioxide, nitrogen, salts, and heat. The immune system and the lymphatic system are the body's defense systems. Some sources list the lymphatic system as part of the immune system and count only 11 bodily systems, while others list it as its own system. It is both its own system and part of the immune system. The reason for such specificity is that the immune system defends the body from foreign substances, and the lymphatic system is the network of vessels and nodes that drain lymph back to the blood. The lymphatic system is more concerned with cleansing the cellular environment within the body, whereas the immune system is more concerned with the reactions of the body in terms of fighting off and resisting external threats, such as microbial pathogens, also known as disease-causing agents, and other diseases, and germs, basically. As we cover each step involved in restoring and maintaining physical health, we will be regularly linking back to which systems they are directly related to the maintenance of. The most important thing we need to remember is how interconnected and interrelated each system is. Each system performs an important role on its own, but it is dependent on other systems to complete its functions. Quote, an example of the way these systems are interrelated is the blood. It is part of the cardiovascular system, and it carries products of digestion, the digestive system, to body cells, excretory wastes, excretory system, to the kidneys and hormones, the endocrine system, to target organs such as those forming part of the reproductive system. A body's system is a collection of parts. Oh, I accidentally quoted the same piece. Science and Learning Hub. So I don't know why I copied and pasted the quote from the very beginning. So the next chapter. Learn how neurotransmitters, neuromodulators, and hormones affect you. Blah. Let me take a deep breath. There's a lot of terms today, so I'm tripping over them a little bit. So learn how neurotransmitters, neuromodulators, and hormones affect you and how you affect them. Please don't be scared off by the terms. As with all the science we cover, we'll do it slowly and make sure it makes sense in everyday terms. First and foremost, what is a neurotransmitter? Quote, neurotransmitters are chemical messages that your body can't function without. Their job is to carry chemical signals, messages, from one neuron, which is a nerve cell, to the next target cell. The next target cell can be another nerve cell, a muscle cell, or a gland. That's from Cleveland Health Clinic. Okay, so it's passing a message from one cell to another, as in the way we pass messages throughout our body. I haven't edited this one in a while. It's what? So it's passing a message from one cell to another, as is the way we pass messages throughout the body. This is the way we pass messages throughout the body. As the name suggests, neuro, relating to the nerves or the nervous system, not shockingly, originate from the nervous system. There are actually over 100 different neurotransmitters that have been identified by science, and we'll only cover a few ones here. But as always, there is an abundance of literature available for those who want to learn more. Now, if they're messengers, what kind of messages are being sent from our nervous system and why? What is their purpose? The nervous system controls such functions as heartbeat and blood pressure, breathing, muscle movements, thoughts, memory, learnings and feelings, sleep, healing and aging, stress response, hormone regulation, digestion, sense of hunger and thirst, and sense itself, so response to what you see, hear and feel, touch and taste. They're the messengers to help our body function day in and day out. They allow the brain and nervous system to control the body, its movements and its functions and everything in between. Individual cells throughout our body don't have tiny little brains to figure out what to do and how to do it. Instead, they get messages from the brain and spinal cord through neurotransmitters to do or not do something. This is how our bodies function in an integrated way. The neurotransmitters act as the integrators of bodily functions and behaviors. Neurotransmitters are generally excitatory, inhibitory, or modulators. That means they can incite excitement, which is action, inhibition, which is non-action, and or modulation, which is tweaks or adjustments. While there's fascinating science behind how neurotransmitters actually work, we're going to limit our focus on some of the key neurotransmitters actually do in our body, and in some cases how we can use our understanding of them to our advantage. Let's jump straight into dopamine as an example. Dopamine plays a role in the body's motivation system, sometimes referred to as the pleasure reward system. Most of us who've come across the term dopamine have probably heard it in relation to addictions and how things like gambling, drugs, sugar, or social media utilize dopamine hits to keep us addicted. Dopamine also helps with things like focus, concentration and memory, motivation and learning memory, and also things like sleep and mood. While dopamine sometimes gets a bad rap because of its relation to addictions, dopamine is necessary for us to take action, for learning, and plays an interesting role in metabolism. When it comes to learning, dopamine released into our system motivates us to learn and to chase goals. It acts as our motivator and it rewards us for achievement through the feeling of pleasure or enjoyment. It can also cause us pain as a drive or motivator to do more of something. So let's take sugar as an example. When we ingest sugar, we get a hit of dopamine. In this case, the dopamine causes us the feeling of pleasure and enjoyment from the sugar, but a small amount of pain as well to say, hey, that felt good, I want more. The pleasure is the reward and the pain is the motivator to ingest more sugar. The importance of knowing this is that if we ingest food with hidden sugars, our reward centers will release dopamine to ensure we keep eating more. If we know this, we understand that the once you pop, you can't stop mentality. We understand that whatever food we are eating is literally both rewarding us and causing us pain to motivate us to ingest more if it contains anything that causes dopamine to be released. We can use this knowledge to our advantage in two ways. Firstly, if we need to reduce our eating or are struggling with poor eating habits or binge eating, we can be mindful of sugar content and the effect that's going to have on the amount that we want to eat when we eat a particular food. Secondly, if we want to improve our eating habits by eating more vegetables, for example, or encouraging our children to eat more vegetables, we can intentionally add a small amount of sugar into our healthy cooking to incite that motivation for more. Sugar has quite a bad reputation, and let's face it, most sugar is very low in micronutrients, so standalone it has limited benefit, but it is also immediately accessible energy that can be burned off or will be turned into fat. The inclusion or absence of sugar in our food has impact on the release of dopamine and in turn an effect on how much we're going to feel like eating and also our mood during and after eating. That's not to say it will immediately increase the amount we eat outside of our control, but it is work and some pain for us to ignore the dopamine messenger that demand more. When we look introspectively at our desires with a greater understanding of our drivers, we can pause to question whether or not it's dopamine hit our body is craving or if we need more. Being out of touch with the difference is, in my view, likely to be a large contributor of obesity because the body is craving the dopamine hit and the mind keeps eating to fulfill that need. But the problem with dopamine is the pain it causes to motivate to get or do more is a trick of the mind. Learning what our body needs and being able to differentiate between need and craving caused by dopamine is a very powerful skill. Cravings can lead us toward maladaptive mechanisms, eating or otherwise, because we are seeking the quick dopamine pleasure hit. To get out of the vicious dopamine cycle of motivation towards the pleasure and pain to motivate us to do more, we can learn to identify it, consciously choose to ignore it, and sit with the discomfort of doing so, or to not act on it, not necessarily ignore it, and to deliberately seek out serotonin-increasing activities. We'll come back to serotonin, but while we're on the topic of food and appetite, let's discuss a hormone called ghrelin. We know now that sugar can affect appetite because we might respond to our dopamine hits by eating more, irrelevant of our satiety, our fullness. Something else that can have a big effect on our eating beyond our satiety levels, how full we are, includes emulsifiers. Emulsifiers are very common in processed food, and emulsifiers are added to mixes of food, anything really, that would otherwise separate from each other. Think of oil and water. If we put oil in water and wanted them to stay mixed in an emulsion, then we would need to add an emulsifier to stabilize the mix and keep the different substances dispersed evenly. When we consume emulsifiers, they irritate our stomach wall lining to the extent that our satiety hormones are interrupted. They cannot tell the brain that we are full because they cannot check the content of the food for what is required, and therefore we may not get the satiety message. As with everything, knowing this is to our advantage. If overeating is an issue, we can avoid emulsifiers in food or food with emulsifiers to assist our satiety messages in functioning optimally. If not eating sufficient highly micronutrient food is an issue, you could use it to trick your body into eating more. After learning about the effects of sugar and emulsifiers, my initial reaction was, oh no, I better avoid them entirely. But after more careful consideration, I realized instead I could use them to my advantage. I could avoid them most of the time, but if I wanted to get my toddlers and husband to eat more vegetables, I could add a little bit of sugar and something with an emulsifier to trick their bodies into eating more. I avoid processed foods that contain it most of the time, and I'm aware that when we eat processed foods that contain that stuff, it'll have an impact in our ability to stop and make healthier choices of eating when we're full and eating healthier, more nutritious options. It really is an example of the power of understanding the basic mechanics and science behind things and using that knowledge to optimize our health. Cortisol is another important one. Cortisol, often referred to as the stress hormone, has a lot more function than just that. Appropriate cortisol levels and release are very dependent on good quality sleep, adequate exposure to sunlight at the right time of day, and completion of the stress cycle throughout the day. Chronically elevated cortisol levels lead to chronic stress, and chronic stress has a raft of poor health side effects. It can be easier to think of cortisol as our wakefulness and alertness. As our wakefulness and alertness neurotransmitter rather than our stress hormone. When we sense or perceive a threat, which we covered under understanding how the brain and nervous system works, cortisol increases to increase our alertness as a protective survival response. Increased alertness is stress. Dopamine tells our body more. Oh, I'm jumping around a little bit in this one. I have not edited physical health as much as I have had the other ones. So, hence this sort of just jumping around. Plus I was like heavily learning this stuff as I was writing it, so you can see I'm just kind of dumping the information as I figure it out. I'll clean it up by the time I edit the book. So dopamine tells our body more. It's an excitatory neurotransmitter. We also rely on neurotransmitters to tell us enough, stop. Those are the inhibitors. Serotonin, for example, plays a crucial role in regulating mood, sleep patterns, anxiety, appetite, and pain. And the balance between excitatory and inhibitory signals is critical for maintaining our physiological and psychological equilibrium. The interaction between neurotransmitters is a dynamic and constantly changing process. For example, adrenaline, also known as epinephrine when it's outside the brain, is derived from dopamine. That increases the complexity of our internal chemical messaging system. Adrenaline has a profound effect on both the immune system and the brain's capacity to learn and remember information. Interestingly, while adrenaline can't cross the blood-brain barrier, meaning it affects the body and brain differently, cortisol is present throughout both, illustrating how our physical and mental stress responses are interconnected yet distinct. The body's response to stress, mediated by cortisol and adrenaline, highlights a sophisticated mechanism that can enhance immune function while maintaining mental clarity. Practices such as cold showers or ice baths or exercise can increase adrenaline levels for immune support, while calming techniques can help maintain mental calmness despite the physical stress and discomfort. Understanding and knowing how to consciously manipulate this balance through lifestyle choices and practices can significantly impact our well-being. Understanding how neurotransmitters and hormones like dopamine, serotonin, cortisol, and adrenaline influence and are influenced by our actions is powerful insight into our health. It's not just about the biochemical impact of these substances, but also about how our daily habits, our stress levels, and even thought patterns can modulate or control their activity, affecting everything from our mood and motivation to our immune system's effectiveness. By understanding the back and forth between our biological systems and behaviors, we can more effectively influence our health outcomes. Recognizing dopamine's role in motivation rather than just pleasure, or the nuanced effects of adrenaline and cortisol on our body and brain, empowers us to make more informed choices that enhance our physical and mental health. Next chapter is gather baseline measurements of your physical health. I don't have a quote for this one. I only just finished writing it. Understanding the baseline of your physical health is a really important part of our journey to wellness and self-improvement. Collecting vital health metrics can serve as the starting point for improvement, and tracking regularly can help highlight when something's gone wrong or requires our attention. The first, let's talk about sleep. The quality and consistency of our sleep can have a big impact on our overall health and well-being. Sleep underpins every aspect of our health. Tracking sleep patterns uncovers insights into how well our body and mind rest and rejuvenate each night, which sort of sets the stage for other health endeavors. To measure sleep quality if we want to, we can use sleep tracker apps on smartphones or simply journal to monitor sleep patterns and duration. The concept of physical age is a fascinating concept because it's a measure not of the years you've lived, but of how well your body functions. Like assessing the condition of a secondhand car, not by its manufacture date, but how well it's been maintained over the years. This perspective encourages a focus on lifestyle choices that enhance the body's efficiency and longevity. There's countless online calculators and health assessments that can estimate this based on lifestyle choices and physical condition. Body composition is a useful measure because understanding the body's composition between fat and muscle goes beyond mere numbers on a scale. By examining your body fat percentage, muscle mass, and bone density, you gain a comprehensive view of your health. We can gain a comprehensive view of our health. So we can measure our body composition in a few different ways. Some professional health services or gyms offer body composition analysis through methods like DEXA scans, or you can even just order a little caliper tool online that you can measure your body fat percentage. And talking about body fat percentage, we can then talk about BMI, the body mass index. So while the BMI offers at a quick glance at our health, it is a marker that requires a lot of context. So it's widely recognized as a health metric calculated from a person's weight and height. It provides a simple numerical measure to categorize individuals into different weight statuses, potentially indicating their health risks related to weight. However, the BMI has its limitations. It does not differentiate between fat and muscle mass, nor does it account for distribution of body fat, which can significantly vary among individuals. A holistic approach to health assessment also needs to consider additional factors that we've talked about around the body fat percentage. But BMI can also be a useful starting point. So if you want to calculate your BMI, you can use a BMI calculator online. A quick search online will help you find one. One really important one is regular blood tests, which are akin to checking the oil in the car. They keep us informed about our body's internal workings. So from nutrient levels to potential health risks, blood work provides crucial data points for maintaining our health. Blood work or blood tests can be scheduled with a healthcare provider who can guide specific tests based on your health profile, on our health profile, or we can request more comprehensive testing based on as a baseline for our overall health. Gut health can also be measured. Our gut microbiome is a bustling city of microbes with a profound impact on our overall health. So that we can test with specialized kits that you can buy for home use or with samples sent to labs for analysis. I actually looked into FMT a while ago, fecal microbiota transplant, for myself. And that one, I had a full workup. So that was stool tests, endoscopy, colonoscopy. I even had an MRI to see what was going on inside of me. That level isn't necessary for most people. They were specifically looking to see if FMT could help heal my chronic allergies I was suffering. Incidentally, I did qualify for it, and just before I was about to get started, I fell pregnant, and you can't go through that process while you're pregnant, so I ended up not going down the path, and I haven't chosen to pursue it since. Just as a side story. And along those lines, you can get more specific testing based on your specific health concerns or any notable family medical history, personalized testing, and scans. Sorry, based on your family history. So personalized testing and scans can offer really deep insights into things that you specifically might have a higher risk of. So it's kind of a proactive approach that ensures any underlying issues are identified early and allowing time for early intervention. These ones are usually best discussed with a healthcare professional to identify relevant scans or tests that take into account personal and family health history for any advanced screening or testing that may be specifically relevant to you. And while we're on the note of testing, it's important to consider that your technological and digital health around safeguarding your data. In an era where data is gold, choosing health services that protect your privacy is paramount. It is of utmost importance that there is data security in your health assessments, because your health journey also needs to respect your personal privacy. And whatever testing you choose to do, we must also remember that the goal is not merely to collect data, but to understand and utilize that information to craft a personalized path to optimal health and to understand our baseline and where we came from. From there, we have a way to measure our improvements in health going forward and an obvious way to identify any declines in any particular area of health. The idea of measuring is not to hit any particular standard or compare against others. It is simply a way of us being able to track our progress. Okay, so that's the end of step three, understand your biology and physiology. So we're kind of powering through these steps one step at a time per episode. I think we might slow down on the next one or two, but when I go back and edit the book, I'll try and make those particular chapters a little bit, I'll add a bit more flow where I can. As I mentioned earlier, when researching this particular section of the book, I was focused on learning at the same time. And so you might see that reflected in, it's just a factual dump rather than my usual storytelling style, I think. But I will just quickly tell you the next few steps. So the next step that we're going to talk through is restoring your healthy body composition. That's step four. Step five is release negative energy and restore meridian flow. Step six will be about restoring positive energy and maintaining proper function, filling your cup, which interestingly you might remember was step three in emotional and mental health. Obviously they're very interrelated. And step seven is about increasing your fitness. So the next three steps are really going to be about maintaining proper flow and balance and equilibrium inside your body. And then the step seven, we'll talk about how to then increase strength and flexibility and agility and balance, coordination, all that sort of stuff. If you would like small and regular snippets of health information and well-being information, I'm starting on my @PertraReed account on Instagram to try and share this information in very small snippets that are digestible and accessible to a broader audience, actually through telling stories with a little bunny and a big bunny, so that it's inclusive and it's not gender specific or geographically specific or culturally specific. It's just around the lessons in as simplified a way as I can. So if you're interested, please do go and check out @PertraReed on Instagram. And I would love your feedback as well as to whether there are ways that you think I could improve on that. I'm still working on my storytelling in a very condensed time frame that Instagram and social media in general allows for, in a way that I can actually connect with people. So feedback is very welcome. And I have nothing else to say today, so have a lovely day. The dopamine system, the musculoskeletal system includes, as you may have guessed from the name, dopamine. The different systems are also interrelated, and their overall purpose is to maintain dopamine